Hello, everyone.
Welcome to the Tie Podcast.
Culture.
Competition.
Architecture.
The dirt.
Drinking.
Eating.
Reading.
Thinking.
God, I love the dirt.
Let's not waste any more time.
Let's go straight to the pod.
Thank you all for being here.
We greatly appreciate the support.
Welcome to the Tie Podcast.
It gets spiritual back in those Oregon woods. I think people get very spiritual in the woods of Oregon, if we're being honest.
I think they do. I'm going to go with some recency bias here today and talk about Old Barnwell.
And I'll also go with some recency bias. I'm going to talk about Sleepy Hollow. So
they do like to get spiritual in Homer, Nebraska. I can vouch for that. I like to get spiritual in Homer, Nebraska.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the fifth rendition of the Tie Course Reviews. Today, we're going to be talking about golf courses that are great to play solo, great for match play, and highly photogenic. So the whole idea behind the Tie Course Reviews is that we choose categories to rate golf courses within that you're not going to see in a traditional ratings or reviewing system, but to show that a course can be great for a reason outside of its championship caliber or the aesthetics of the course or what have you. There are many different ways for a course to be great. There are many things that can make a golf course worth playing and make it interesting. And so these are three categories that we think fit well within that context of being things that aren't going to be traditionally viewed in a rankings or rating system as making a great golf course, but still have value and show the merits of different places. So we hope you enjoyed this episode. If you haven't listened to our other Tie Course Reviews episodes, go listen to those. And without any further delay, let's get straight to the episode. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Tie Podcast. My name is Henry Schimpf. I am joined for episode 5 of the Tie Course Reviews, as always, by my running mate, Mr. Dr. Professor, the Reverend Walker Simas. How are you, sir?
I'm doing just fantastic. Thrilled to be here for another TCR. It's been at least a couple of weeks. We get itchy when it goes past 3 or 4 weeks. So glad to be here.
Like the TCRs, it's, you know, anytime I get a nice message, I always kind of throw in, hey, you know, really appreciate it. What are you enjoying? And a lot of people, they like hearing about golf courses. So that's what we're doing today. We're talking golf courses. It's TCR season. We've got three categories for people. What we're going with today is some categories of courses that are, you know, it's a little out of the standard view of things. I would say, like, these aren't things in all likelihood that are going to play into certainly a rating system or even just general reviews that you would see of courses. I don't think that these are things that you're going to see if someone just wrote, maybe not even necessarily a ranking, but just saying like, hey, here's what I kind of think of this course. We're talking about courses that are particularly photogenic, courses that are great to play solo, and courses that are great for match play, the characteristics of those different courses, kind of what some of the implications are in each of those buckets. You know, what do we mean by a course being photogenic? What are kind of the deeper considerations there? You know, or is that purely a positive thing? Like, there are a lot of different ways that you can go with all of these different things. So I'll use that as a springboard to go straight to you, Mr. Simas. You're going to lead us off with great photogenic golf courses. Give us a little bit of color on the category itself, and then hit us with your first course of the day.
Yeah, there's kind of a sideball there. I didn't really consider the idea that maybe a course being super photogenic could be a detractor, but I'm starting
surely
to think of
a knuckleball. That's a definite knuckle. It's not a curve. You know, I wasn't trying to completely trick you, but
it's,
know,
a slider. Little
knuckler, you know, there's a little funk to it.
I don't know. Courses that photograph well usually play well. I think that's fair to say, but we've kind of opened up the idea that it's certainly not a new idea that turf conditions and architecture, when they marry well, go a long way. But
it's a little, you know, square is a rectangle. Rectangle is not a square, sort of stuff, right?
Yeah, and then we're getting into House Theory Thursday here, and TCRs is an extension of
it's going to be Mudball Monday before we know it.
Well, before I get to the first course, I want to list kind of some of the first courses that I ever went out to with a camera, and then kind of talk about those briefly before I list mine. I guess the first course that I ever photographed was when I was in Australia, I took a camera over and had obviously no idea what I was doing with a camera, but you know, a lot of the golf courses in the Melbourne area are very like suburban, like in geometrical shapes around neighborhoods and things of that nature. And I've always loved properties that are treed to some degree, because it kind of filters light in and out. And one thing that I love so much, I saw a tweet or an Instagram post by Mike Clayton a couple of days ago talking about ground hazards. Like, man, it's so much better to carry some hollow with a bunch of scrub in it than it is to try to carry a bunch of trees or a water hazard or something like that. And that's something that I feel like the golf in Melbourne does such a good job of, is like, you know, there's a direct route between you and the hole, but what's in between that on the ground can really make the golf really interesting. And obviously we know a lot about the bunkers there and the chiseled edges and the loam faced bunkers, which are like concrete. That was kind of my first go round. I was out at Seminole actually a year ago for the Stevens Cup, got a memory today. And obviously that's a very easy golf course to photograph, but there's not a lot of, light being filtered in and out. I mean, it's completely exposed to the sun. So it's, it can be a little strange at time to try and get photos like in the middle of the day where there's just the sun kind of makes it really hard to appreciate some of the undulations out there, which are so important, especially on that ridgeline. I remember Rustic Canyon in California being a really cool course to take photos of. Maidstone in the Northeast, just like really beautiful stuff up in the Northeast. But I'm going to go with some recency bias here today and talk about Old Barnwell, because that's a course that I did recently. And man, just reflecting on, I hope everybody read that newsletter. If you haven't, go hammer it. We'll plug it in. But Old Barnwell, still thinking about it, like it's got some of the funkiest shit I've ever seen on a golf course. And I've seen posts of people kind of digesting it. I know they just kind of had the opener and people have gotten a couple spins around it for the first time. Like I've heard these comparisons of National Golf Links, which makes a lot of sense. And then Garden City, which also makes a lot of sense. And I see similarities between some of the features out there and some of the features at Old Barnwell, but overwhelmingly, one of the things that I think Old Barnwell does so well, really two things. The first is that it's got some really great contrast between some nooky holes that are kind of in and amongst the trees where you feel like, okay, this is where I am right now. I have nothing else trying to distract me from this view or this hole or this green site or this particular shot. And then it's got some holes that are just wide ass open where you can see, you know, nearly a mile away from you at a single time. And that contrast, I think, is really cool, not just for playing golf, but for taking photos. And then the other thing, which I think is just super cool at an Old Barnwell, it's like the range in undulation. And yes, a lot of it is actually man-made out there. Like the dirt wasn't moved far to get some of the knobs and hollows that they have out there, but it was constructed. And one of the things that I loved about what Blake and Brian were saying was, in no way were they trying to kind of, you know, mask the fact that some of the stuff was created by them. In a way, they were kind of almost showing it off and just creating things that function really well. And I think that photograph's just like awesome throughout the day, like even throughout the middle of the day, you can still get some really cool photos of some of those features. Like one thing that kind of surprises me, and I'll list obviously two more golf courses today that are very different in this regard, but one thing that I found super interesting about Old Barnwell is that like there are a lot of really heavy hitting holes early, and there are some more chill holes around the turn. And obviously 16, 17, 18 is pretty crazy and just like a really fun stretch going back up that canyon up the hill to the clubhouse. But I had a lot of fun taking photos out there. I'm still kind of honing in on my camera game, but it made it really easy for me out there. So I'm still really digesting what Old Barnwell is and love getting to see it through a few different stages. But what a cool golf course. Anxious to get back for the Gilroy and the kids course, and they're creating all sorts of wild shit out there. So yeah, that's my right now my favorite course to photograph.
Nice. That was significantly more color than I would have been able to give on photography, I guess, the light filtering in and out and things of that nature. I'm going to keep things a little bit more simple here, and I'll also go with some recency bias. I'm going to talk about Sleepy Hollow. So I like the comparisons there of Old Barnwell to National Golf Links in Garden City, and you know, bringing Sleepy Hollow into conversation with some of those courses. I think what I really think of when I consider a course that would be really good to photograph, I mean, clearly light is one of the more important things. Like, you need to have light hit holes and features, which is what I'm about to talk about, in the right way at the right time to really make a course intriguing from a photography standpoint. But features is what I really want to focus on. I think that both novelty of features and then just scale and usage and the way that they interact with the course and the way that it plays are the things that make a course really interesting to photograph. It's people seeing things that make, you know, it kind of makes you pop. It makes you say like, wow, like that, I haven't seen a lot of that on a golf course, and I really like want to experience that. You know, like, while it's cool at times to see, it's just like it's a 480 yard dog leg and the grass is kind of pretty and there's some nice bunkers out there. It's like, I don't think that really fires people up all that much, but you know, literally, I think this is pretty definitive. The most photographed hole in the game of golf, the 16th at Sleepy Hollow, you know, when the sun hits that thumbprint just right and it sits up over the Hudson, it's like, okay, you know, with the horseshoe bunker as well, like, I haven't seen that on the local Muni, you know? And so I think that is what it comes down to with photography is, yes, the light is what really enhances that, and the shadows hitting features of greens just right and fairways and whatnot. But I think that novelty is what really pushes people to say like, oh my God, like these are incredible pictures and this is really making me want to go experience that golf course. And so I like the call on Old Barnwell a lot as well, because yes, like that's National Golf Links. Like, National Golf Links introduced to America a lot of types of holes and features and types of bunkers, and Garden City has a lot of the same things that people aren't going to see elsewhere. And Sleepy Hollow has some pretty amazing template holes and bunkering and just things that provide something new for people. And so when you couple that with a place that really does get to interact with the light properly, yeah, you can take some pretty good pictures. The last thing I'm going to say here on photography, and I did kind of throw you that knuckleball, as we're going to put it, of, hey, is this purely a positive thing? This will take a little bit of an interesting spin here, but I was having a conversation with a friend last week about Sleepy Hollow specifically. And this was before we had talked about doing this, but anyway, it's interesting that we've decided to do this TCR and this being one of the categories. And the comment, my friend's words, who will go unnamed, not my own, were that, you know, Sleepy Hollow, if we're going to talk about its photogeneity and the way people perceive the place from a rankings perspective, you know, it kind of becomes a little bit like an Instagram model, right? It's like, you see all these pictures and you're like, man, this is pretty good. And you see in person, it doesn't mean, it does not by any means mean that you're going to be let down. However, the odds that something over-delivers when you've seen so many pictures of something are pretty darn low. So I think that would be my comment on courses that you see photographed a lot and are just all over Instagram and whatnot, is that, yeah, like they can absolutely live up to the hype. And Sleepy Hollow, when it's playing right, when it's good, it pretty much does. I mean, I can't say that place would be a whole lot better. But it's going to be really hard for a place to over-deliver when you see it. You know, you see the 16th under this perfect light at 6:52 p.m. when the sun's hitting the angle just perfectly, and then you go play it at 2:30 in the afternoon and it's a shade softer, like you're kind of like, oh, you know, it's not quite like the picture. And so I'm not going to go back to my Instagram model discussion there. That could go in some nefarious directions. But that I think is how I would somewhat articulate what a course being very photogenic can mean for people's experiences playing it when they do actually get out there.
No, I love the thumbprint comment. That was nail on the head right there. It's like, you can't really argue when it is right. And to a certain degree, photos are just a vehicle to get people places because there's nothing like experiencing it.
Vehicle. Speaking of vehicles, tortillas. No, I'm kidding.
Get out of here. All right.
Okay. Second category.
Take us through your solo round. This is a passion, I feel like, for both of us.
Yes, definitely. Solo golf is an important thing. It takes many different forms. You know, sometimes I play some tunes out of my back pocket. Sometimes I just go like, you know, Goggins mode, total silence, just locked in. It depends. I would argue that if you're really going to capture a great place, the course I'm about to talk to you being one of them, you're not going to need that music. However, it can always enhance the mood, right? Like if you're really feeling yourself, you're like, man, I could really dial up some, you know, fill in the blank, like whatever you're feeling. Probably not Hot Mulligan, but I do like Hot Mulligan. More to come there on Mudball Monday. So what I'm really after, I think, when it comes to a solo round, like, yeah, I want it to be a great golf course. But one thing I will say is that if we're talking a truly great golf course, I want to experience that with other people. I want to be able to, you know, potentially compete with somebody else. I want to be able to kind of discuss the holes and whatnot with other people. The experience of a great course to me is enhanced by who you end up playing with. So this doesn't mean that I don't want to play a really great course, and certainly doesn't mean that I don't believe the course I'm about to mention is a really stellar course. But I think the main thing that I think about when it comes to playing solo is that I want it to be like this awesome walk through nature, basically. Like whether that means, whatever that means to you, like that could be Pebble Beach, like walking on the cliffs. That can be, you know, something deep in the woods, like you're just kind of making your way through the trees and really getting spiritual with things. But I want for it to be just a kind of intimate setting that makes you feel like you're in nature. I don't think of a course that is more urban, I guess would be what I would say, as good of a solo experience as something that's a little bit out there. The other thing that I would say that I think is that I think this is probably unique to me and certainly others, but probably not as common of a viewpoint, is like, I enjoy it being like a pretty hard walk. You know, if I'm going to play solo, like I want to feel like I'm out there, like getting some activity in if I'm just like playing golf solo. And so using those two things to funnel into the course that I'm going to talk about, it's Band and Trails. The Trails thing is like, you know, you hear that name, you're like, well, why exactly do they choose Trails? Like you have Band and Dunes, you have Pacific Dunes, you have the Sheep Ranch, like Old McDonald. We know why it's named that. Like, why did they choose Trails? And then you play it and you're like, oh, because there's like this badass trail from every green to tee. And you like cut through some woods and little brush and whatnot. And you can't see the next tee until you make it through that trail. And it just makes perfect sense. And so Trails is like this. It is kind of like a hike on a lot of the holes back through the woods. There are some amazing views of the coastline and all of that, but it is like a really, really intimate setting in nature that is different than a lot of the rest of Bandon, you know, Bandon Dunes and Pacific Dunes and Sheep Ranch. Like you're sitting right up there on top of the Oregon coastline and it's absolutely incredible. But those are the kinds of things, as I talked about earlier, where like, I kind of want to be out there seeing those amazing views, taking those amazing walks with a couple people, ideally. I'm not going to complain about any walk that I get at any course at Bandon. Let's just be very clear about that. I'll go play any of those courses solo. But if I did have to choose one, it would be Bandon Trails for the reasons I've described. It also, as I've alluded to, like it's kind of a hike out there. You know, like if you went and played a little 3-hour pre-dinner round solo at Bandon Trails when everybody else is, you know, ready to hit the cocktail hour at 4 p.m. like you'd show up like, boys, I just got the work in, you know, like I hit some shots, probably too many of them. I got a really nice walk in. I've got a little spiritual back there around the turn. I mean, the 10th hole, kind of like 9, 10, 11, 12, before you start to make your way back out, it gets spiritual back in those Oregon woods. I think people get very spiritual in the woods of Oregon, if we're being honest.
I think they do.
But I get spiritual without any extra additions, let's say, playing golf at a place like Bandon Trails back in the woods of Oregon. So before we go too far down that rabbit hole, I'm going to shut up. I'm going to toss it back to you for your solo course. And interested to hear, as per usual, we haven't talked about this. You know, we're just kind of shooting from the hip.
We never do.
So curious to hear what a solo round means to you and how you kind of funnel your way into choosing a course that would be an ideal solo round.
Yeah, I feel like of any of the golf topics that we talk about, this is one that I feel like we both care about, but we don't discuss a whole lot. I didn't know what to do with this particular category. Like, I think you and I both have these courses, and everyone listening has this course that they've played alone the most. And for whatever reason, it's just the course that comes to mind. Like, if you play a golf course alone, whether with music or by yourself, it's good time. I mean, it's like laying on the beach for half a day by yourself. It's like going on a run with no headphones. It's like you got to spend time with yourself. And this is part of the reason I love the game, is you have the option to do that. And then in thinking about, okay, well, you know, it's not really feasible on some courses, like, to go play alone. If you're at a private club, you can do that if you're a member. You certainly can't do that if you're a guest. And then if you're talking about public courses, if you're playing a course that has any sort of demand at all, you're just probably not going to play as a single. And I think that if there's any piece of this argument that I'm going to toss out the window, it's going to be that one, because we're just talking about a golf course that you get a lot of by playing alone. And then in some of the topics that you were hitting within that, being one with nature and just kind of experiencing a place having a little bit tougher of a walk, I feel like you were talking right to me. Because my choice today is going to be Landman Golf Club out in Homer, Nebraska. This is a place
they like to get spiritual.
They do like to get spiritual in Homer, Nebraska. I can vouch for that. I like to get spiritual in Homer, Nebraska. And I really look forward to being back, but I've enjoyed my time away. And, you know, this golf course, like, I do realize that for those of you who have played it or are planning on playing it or haven't, it's a golf course that is not for the architecture, not for anything else. It's a golf course that you need to go experience. It's unlike anything I've ever seen in my life. And I got so many hours on those hills during construction that, like, not only did we play it a bunch in the dirt and whatever, but I had plenty of time out there just completely by myself. And you just stand and you look around 360 degrees and you say, this is the craziest landscape I've ever seen. You know, like, I look forward to being there together and showing you around, but it's truly remarkable. I mean, this piece of land, it was to the Andersons, the owners, is like their old pheasant hunting property, basically. And, you know, in Nebraska, most of eastern Nebraska, especially when you go north of Omaha, is dead flat, as you would expect. And then you do hit, it's not the sandhills, but you hit this, like, mountain region if you keep going west, you know, west of, like, Sioux City, basically. And Landman sits right at the top of where the mountain region begins. So it's like flat, 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 giant hill. And, you know, when you pull up, you drive up the giant hill and you are not shown the golf course until you are quite literally standing on the first tee. And then by the time you reach the fourth hole, you're in an entirely different landscape than you were when you drove up the freaking hill, which is an entirely different landscape than you were when you were 5 minutes away from the golf course. And then by the time you make it to 7, 8, 9, 10, Instead of being kind of in these valleys or on the tops of these ridges, you're now in what used to be, you know, cornfield, and you can see forever. And the Gulf is just purposefully wild. Like I saw stuff out there, you know, having seen a lot of golf before I went out and worked at Landman, it was like, we were building features out there that I could very confidently say, without having, you know, played every golf course in the world, is like, this doesn't exist. Like, this does not exist anywhere. And if you were to remove the golf, if you were to walk the routing before golf was built as a hike, like you and your dog and maybe a speaker and a cold beer, I don't know, it would still be just like a really great experience. It's a tough walk, yes. It would be an amazing round to have with 4, 5, 6 good buddies. In fact, I really would recommend, I think that's the way to go. But for me personally, it would just be super special to walk around that place alone and have many times. Look forward to doing it again.
And now a quick word about our friends at Good Walk Coffee. Mr. Simus, what's your coffee game been like recently?
Man, I always, and I mean always, have the Mudball Half Calf on me. I've been loving the Bump and Run cold brews on the go. And lately, it's been the breakfast ball.
Give me a little bit more color on the Bump and Run cold brew.
Well, I love making coffee at home, but I can't do it all the time. And when I really got to move and I need my good walk, I reach straight in the fridge, grab a can and go, and I get exactly what I need.
Where can the people go if they want to get involved with our friends at Good Walk Coffee?
You can purchase all your coffee, cold brew, espresso, pods, cases, beans, merch, and more for 20% off using code THETIE. That is THETIE at checkout. Set your custom subscription. The world is yours, only at goodwalkcoffee.com. And that'll conclude my best course to play solo. And I'll take y'all through best course for match play. I mean, I don't think this one warrants a whole lot of explanation. I tried to go with a course that was practical in a sense, but I think I went a little bit out of bounds here on purpose. My choice for today is going to be St. Louis Country Club, which is a, you know, I don't know the exact answer. It's a C.B. McDonald. C.B. McDonald was the architect, and Seth Rayner was actually the project manager. So I'm not sure if Seth Rayner is registered in any degree as an architect on that golf course, but it was so interesting. Like, I think back to, like, what was it like building National Golf Links of America? Like, you're introducing some holes from Scotland that just needed to be planted on U.S. soil, and it was an overwhelming success, and that concept works, and you just want to do it everywhere you can. And St. Louis Country Club is home of, I think, some of C.B. McDonald and Seth Rayner, if you want to give him credit. Just some of the cooler template holes that I've seen. And I haven't played all the Rayners. I haven't played Rayners and McDonald's. I mean, I haven't played Chicago and Shoreacre. I mean, there's just, the list goes on. But I do, as I've said many times on the pod before, like, I just love their stuff because I think the variety is immense. They happen to take up a lot of sites that are very natural and have a very good sense of place. And that's why I think they can afford kind of the industrial, almost like man-made circus type of golf or course architecture style. But the reason why I choose St. Louis Country Club as my favorite potential match play course is because it is, it's quite short. I mean, it's 6,600 yards, which, you know, you could make a strong argument for a professional or any sort of competitive golf that basically obsolete. I would love to see a U.S. junior there or something like that. It may even be too short for that. But the thing that I loved and noticed almost immediately when playing St. Louis Country Club is, on a good day with the right pins, you the best players, I mean, I'm talking like world-class players, will find a way to really badly shortside themselves and make a big, big number through 72 holes. And in match play, when the dynamics change and you're forced to maybe take on risks that you wouldn't otherwise, or you know, play from out of position and try and make something happen, I think that golf course brings out like what it's most capable of, what's best about it. A little bit of piece about the piece of land. It's like, it's incredible. I mean, it meanders through kind of like this neighborhood. I think of some of those old movies where, you know, the shot kind of starts in the sky and then it gradually lowers until you feel this really, you know, profound sense of place. And that's kind of what St. Louis feels like. It's just in the middle of a neighborhood, but the routing covers quite a bit of it. And you never feel like the golf course is just sectioned off into this one piece of property. The low spots are really low. The high spots are really high. And the variety is just like insane. I mean, short hole is amazing. They're back-to-back par threes with a Biarritz and then the Eden on the second and the third. The Punch Bowl is honestly one of the better punch bowls I've ever seen. Short little par five, very easy four, but if you don't make four, you may make six type thing. And just some real opportunities to stick pins within 8 or 10 feet from a drop off that is 35, 40, 45 feet. And when you give a player the option to choose wide side and, you know, take a 35, 40 foot putt, or maybe take a risk and aim for that flag, you're going to end up with some bad outcomes eventually. So I loved it. I thought it was a great golf course. One we don't really talk about as far as competitive golf goes. I think a golf course that's well received for architecture junkies, but would love to see some match play action there. What about yours?
Yeah, St. Louis is a place I really want to play, but have not made it out there. A lot of the same sort of ideas here in my match play course. I think I like what you said about a shorter course. So I was thinking about this long and hard today, and one of the things that I think about with match play is you want the score spread, but not too significantly, if that makes sense. I think that a course that really significantly spreads scores is what kind of makes for a great stroke play course. So I had this initial thought, and I think it was a really shitty one, but I was like, oh, I'll talk about Augusta as a great match play course because we've never seen match play there. You see, obviously, a lot of stroke play. But then I started to think, okay, well, what makes Augusta a great stroke play course? And I think what makes it really exciting is that in that back nine in particular, there's no telling what scores can be on certain holes, like the 11th or the 12th hole, rather. Like, you see a lot of twos and shout out Mr. Clean. You see some tens, you know, same thing with 15. Shout out Sergio. You see threes and you see God knows what. And ultimately, I think what makes match play courses really exciting is a large collection of holes where both players, if assuming that they're playing pretty well, like you, let's just be straight that like if someone's playing like shit, it doesn't really matter what the golf course is. Like, they're going to get whipped regardless. And so we're going to assume that guys are playing reasonably well here. But I think that courses where you have a reasonable chance to make a score kind of regardless on the majority of the holes, if you're playing pretty well, is what makes match play exciting, because you want to see a lot of putts that mean something, and you don't want to have too many holes where it's like, yeah, one guy's got an eagle putt and the other guy kind of screwed it up and he's just way out of it. And so with that said, I don't know for sure if this is a good choice that I made, but I think it is. I'm going with TPC Sawgrass. I like that when you look at the players, the scores always seem to be pretty tight. Like, there are a lot of playoffs in the players. I think it's an outsized number of playoffs there relative to certainly majors, dare I say the other majors, and certainly big golf events. And I think that is a testament to the golf course and the fact that it spreads people out. Like, if you go out there and don't play well, you will not be in any playoffs. You're not going to make the cut. You're not going to play even close to well. But for the guys who are playing well, it's hard enough to where no one's driving it super deep. You don't see a bunch of guys shooting 64 out there. but it's not super long and it is scoreable enough if you're hitting it pretty well off the tee and in a general sense that most guys are going to shoot reasonably good scores and that keeps scores tight. So I think that's why from a match play perspective, I would imagine if they did something match play oriented out there, you'd see a lot of matches where through, you know, 12, 13 holes, pretty much neck and neck, you're going to have a lot of guys within a hole, two holes, square. And then you get those exciting holes down the stretch where you get to kind of duke it out. You know, you hit the fairway on 16, see what guys can do there. Obviously 17 is always going to be exciting. You know, 18 is that example of a hole where, like, especially in match play, there's a lot of decision-making that's going to go on based on where you're sitting in a match. I think that's what would make it really exciting as well, is that you have holes where there are specific decisions that need to be made. And you see guys make those decisions based on where they are in the tournament. And in match play, I think it becomes that much better because those decisions are being forced on every single hole, because every single hole in and of itself is an individual tournament seemingly. So I think it's a course that has a really interesting collection of holes. And I think the way that the course develops as you go along is another thing that would lend itself to being a really interesting match play course. So I guess they've had the US Amateur. I kind of say this as just a pure, you know, shot in the dark, send one up to the sky. I don't know that there's ever going to be anything match play at TPC Sawgrass. But if there was, I think it would be a pretty interesting golf course for it.
What was it, 94 that Tiger won there? I think it was something.
We should know this.
But that's kind of a call to action. Like, I need to go back and watch some of the highlights. But I wasn't around, man. I wasn't even a thought yet.
I know he made the bomb on the 17th with the big fist bump, wearing the straw hat. Maybe, you know, especially in the Mr. Clean days, there's a case for the straw hat. There's a case for the straw hat. God, that would be electric.
Yeah, the thing is, though, if you wear a straw hat, we cannot see your elbows. You know,
but would it hurt if you're Mr. Clean? Would the straw kind of like poke you in the head?
No, because you're in the zone. You know, you're just not thinking about it.
94, you are right about that.
The elbows, though, like, I wonder if we're going to have a resurgence in big clothes. I don't think so, but it would be
big clothes
awesome.
Is in the industry or like clothes that are large?
Big textile. Coming back. We're bringing back manufacturing.
A couple of North Carolinians here. We know a thing or two about textiles.
Damn right. Thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks for being back for Ty Course Reviews. We're certainly thrilled to be back. Any suggestions for next time? Let us know. DMs, email. I mean, there are a million ways to reach us. We've got more coming for you this week, next week. The week's coming. We're not stopping. And we'll see you soon.
I did have someone ask earlier today, what's the email? So, Mr. Simus, what's the email?
It is, you know, and I kind of regret doing it this way. I wish we had made it shorter because I have this beef with long email addresses. But we are thetiegolfpodcast@gmail.com. Oh, gosh. I've been really into Cosmic Crisp recently, which is no new thing. But, dude, I had an apple in my backpack yesterday, and I didn't eat it. And I left it on my desk this morning for, like, a little treat, sipping my good walk. And it was kind of one of the more red Cosmic Crisps. Crispiest apple I've ever had in my life. I mean, first bite, and I was like, oh my God, that was amazing. So that's my varietals for this week.